Welcome to Module 4 in the Taming Your Tech Habits Masterclass. In this masterclass, we're going to look at how you can disable digital distractions. The reason for this module is that we need to find smart ways to manage our smart technologies. We know that technology has evolved, but the problem is we still have primitive brains in this high-tech world. When we receive, for example, an alert or notification on our phone, or we hear the ping of our email, it triggers an emergency response. And when we see these triggers and when we respond in this way, we are tricked into thinking that everything is urgent and everything is important. And this can have a huge impact on our productivity, our performance, and also on our well-being. In 2018, Udemy conducted an in-depth workplace distraction report, and they found that 69% of full-time employees admitted to being distracted at work, and 70% of them agreed that training would actually help them to manage their time better and be more productive and efficient. So again, I commend you for taking this on board. Obviously, if you're in Module 4, you have been diving into this. We know that digital distractions have a huge financial cost. One study estimated that digital distractions can cost US businesses up to $650 billion a year. A BASIC survey was conducted a couple of years ago, and it was found that a typical manager was interrupted nearly six times an hour, and the average employee can be interrupted up to 70 times a day. And we're going to talk about some of the costs of being digitally distracted and distracted in general, but we can see that these distractions can have a huge impact on our output. In our increasingly hyper-connected world, paying attention and managing technology in a way that doesn't compromise our focus and attention is really going to be an essential skill. So that is why our goal for this module is that we learn how to build a fortress around our focus. There is no doubt that we're living in an attention economy. It is our number one resource. If we cannot manage and sustain and direct our attention, we can become digitally distracted, which can obviously affect our well-being and our output. The problem is that consumer technologies that we use have actually been intentionally designed to prey and to cater for our psychological vulnerabilities. And I explain all of this in the keynotes and lunch and learn seminars that I present. But in essence, technology and the ways that we use it have been purposefully designed to be as addictive, as captivating, and as alluring as possible. So please don't feel bad if you succumb to digital distractions. Know that the technology was designed in such a way. And we'll unpack a little bit of that in this module today. We know that cyber distractions captivate our attention, and that our time and our attention are our two most important resources. But I also believe they're our non-renewable resources. So learning how to manage our time and our attention is exactly what we'll explore in this particular module. Our phones and our tech in general have been designed to capture and captivate both of these, both our time and our attention. But it's not just technology. We've also got to think at corporate workplaces and workspaces. Often more open plan designs have meant that we're susceptible to distractions from chatty co-workers. Meetings can be a huge source of distraction. And so corporate cultures really need to address this particular issue. I'm going to play just a quick snippet here. This was from a gentleman called Tristan Harris. And Tristan Harris is an ex-Google design ethicist. And he is the one who is really championing the cause that we are living in an attention economy. Tristan Harris, and I'm going to explain in just a moment some of the ways that technology has been designed to prey on our weaknesses. But for now, I just want to play you a small excerpt, and the links are in the handouts as well if you wanted to watch these. One of them's a really great TED Talk.
When we talk about technology, we tend to talk about it as this blue sky opportunity. It could go any direction. And I want to get serious for a moment and tell you why it's going in a very specific direction. Because it's not evolving randomly. There's a hidden goal driving the direction of all of the technology we make. And that goal is the race for our attention. Because every news site, TED, elections, politicians, games, even meditation apps, have to compete for one thing, which is our attention. And there's only so much of it. And the best way to get people's attention is to know how someone's mind works. And there's a whole bunch of persuasive techniques that I learned in college at a lab called the Persuasive Technology Lab to get people's attention. A simple example is YouTube. YouTube wants to maximize how much time you spend. And so what do? They autoplay the next video. And let's say that works really well. They're getting a little bit more of people's time. Well, if you're Netflix, you look at that and say, well, that's shrinking my market share, so I'm going to autoplay the next episode. But then if you're Facebook, you say, well, no, that's shrinking all of my market share, so now I have to autoplay all the videos in the newsfeed before waiting for you to click play. So the internet is not evolving at random. The reason it feels like it's sucking us in the way it is because of this race for attention. We know where this is going. Technology is not neutral.
And that's just a small snippet. And as I said, I encourage you to watch that video in its entirety. Tristan Harris is very powerful in convincing us that technology has been designed to hijack our attention. And our job in this modern space isn't to say, well, the suggestion is digital amputation. As you know, many times in this masterclass, I have talked about that not being a viable option. But what we need to do is to learn practical, realistic, pragmatic strategies to actually tame our attention so that we can use technology without it compromising our productivity. And that's exactly why one of the first things I need you to do, if you haven't already done so in this module, is to pause this video and go and complete the Digital Productivity and Performance Self-Assessment. Now, again, rather ironically, this is an online assessment, but this assessment will help us to gauge quantitatively your focus and concentration in terms of a digital culture. Are you able to sustain your performance? Is your attention compromised by digital distractions? And this will give us a baseline measure. Please note your score in the handouts for this particular module, and we'll come back and revisit this assessment at the end of module 6 with hopefully some gains in your actual score. So I want to just explain some of the ways, and I go into a lot more detail when I present keynote presentations and lunch and learn seminars, but I want to just give you a quick snapshot of how technology can distract us and how it can obviously impact both our well-being, but also, as the focus of this module is, how does it affect our productivity? We have data that tells us that nearly 71% of people answer an instant message notification within 2 seconds. As females, 41% of us are said to respond to an email that's only 15 seconds old. We are literally salivating like Pavlov's dogs every time we get an alert or notification. And so this is why we have to be in control of technology and not the other way around, where technology controls us. And this is what I was alluding to earlier in this module, where I said we have ancient brains operating in a high-tech world. Our brains haven't evolved in such a way that they can cope with the incessant, constant demands that the digital world offers. And so this is why I really encourage employees and adults in general to tame their technology so that they are not a slave to their screens. What can we do and what's within our locus of control so that we can do what's on the screen here, and that is prioritize the potent. How can we be in control of technology so that we don't let the phone or email pings trick us into thinking that everything is urgent and important? And hopefully by the end of the module, you'll have some ideas. We really do often feel like this, that we are tethered to technology. And I want to reassure you, there's nothing wrong with you. We know the average US adult is said to spend around 5 hours a day on functional smartphone activities. This includes things like texting, social media use, internet searches, phone calls. But we also know that half of that time is spent on social activities, social media and texting. We need to look at what the reward is. We know that all behavior is driven by some sort of reward. And we know that when we use technology, it is catering for some of our needs. And I'll explain this in just a moment. But we need to think about, can I get this need met that I'm craving through other, perhaps more effective and productive means? So I want to explain some of the ways that technology has been designed to cater for our psychological needs. And one of the things, and again, we go into this in a lot more detail in live presentations, but one of the reasons we find it so hard to close the laptop lid or shut down our phones is that when we use technology, we enter something called the state of insufficiency. We never feel done. We never, let's be honest, we rarely get to that state of inbox zero. So we get hooked into always checking. We also enter something called the psychological state of flow. When we use technology, we often become so engrossed and enraptured with what we're doing that we often lose track of time. And again, design mechanics have been created in such a way that they really cater for this need. As humans, we also suffer from something called loss aversion. It's the traditional reason for why we suffer from FOMO, fear of missing out. This loss aversion tendency means that it keeps us hooked into a cycle of constantly checking in. We are constantly checking social media or perhaps checking our inbox, or perhaps for more personal reasons, it's gaming and playing. We want to mitigate any potential losses, so we get hooked and conditioned into this perpetual state of checking in. We also know, as the Tristan Harris video alluded to, that technology has been intentionally designed using push techniques. You know, the use of alerts and notifications, red icons, red bubbles, I should say, on your icons, autoplay videos, clickbait headlines are just a sample of some of the deliberate ways that technologies have been designed to get us hooked and continually checking. Instagram, for example, intentionally uses algorithms to withhold likes and comments based on your user demographic. They know that you will come back in and check, and so they will deliberately withhold a whole lot of your positive rewards that you're craving, i.e. your likes and comments, and so that when you check back in sporadically, you will get all of a sudden a really big hit. And we know that this can cause huge changes in the brain as well. We'll talk a little bit more about some of those changes in the brain. We also know that technology offers us rewards. Technology has been designed, most technologies have been designed on what we call intermittent variable rewards, a bit like poker machines and games. Many social media platforms offer what we call intermittent variable rewards. So they can cause us to become hooked or dependent or obsessed. So we know that we are intermittently checking in, again, like the Instagram example. We also know that our brains are, when we use technology, releasing the neurotransmitter dopamine.
But today you can get notifications from any app on your phone. So every time you check it, you get this grab bag of notifications that can make you feel a broad variety of emotions.
If it wasn't random, if it was predictably bad or predictably good, then you would not get addicted. The predictability would take out the addictiveness.
That's the same logic behind slot machines. And it's effective. Slot machines make more money in the US than baseball, movies, and theme parks combined. And they become addicting about 3 to 4 times faster than other kinds of gambling. Some apps even replicate the process of pulling a slot machine lever with the pull to refresh feature. That's a conscious design choice. Those apps are usually capable of continuously updating content, but the pull action provides an addicting illusion of control over that process. In the future, we might see healthier ways of delivering notifications.
Another way that technology has been designed to prey on our psychological needs and vulnerabilities is that it caters for what we call bad forecasting. As humans, we often underestimate how long a task will take us to complete. We tell ourselves we'll just quickly check social media for, 2 minutes, and before we know it, we're scrolling for an hour. And so this is one of the basic design principles that has been intentionally designed to hijack our attention. Instead of seeing this sign on Facebook, I believe we need to see this. Do you want to spend the next 20 minutes? On social media, for example, instead of seeing what you see on the screen here, where it asks you, do you want to see a photo? What should really come into play is this. Do you want to spend the next 20 minutes scrolling on Facebook? So one of our basic vulnerabilities is our inability to regulate our time on tasks. Another way that technology causes changes and causes us to be vulnerable to the psychological appeal of technology is that when we use technology, our brain releases the neurotransmitter dopamine. Dopamine is that feel-good hormone. And so our brain gets wired to seek whatever the pleasurable activity was that released that neurotransmitter, so we seek more and more of it. So we are craving that pleasured state that technology often has given us. We know other hormones are released when we use technology, things like adrenaline, serotonin, and these all activate the reward pathways in the brain, making it really hard for us to switch off. We also know, as I mentioned in one of the earlier modules, that our physical state can be altered. Remember I mentioned that condition called email apnea? We literally can have increased heart rates, hits of adrenaline, and all of these physiological responses activate our sympathetic nervous system. Remembering that's our fight or flight mode of thinking. And when we're in that sympathetic nervous system, it makes it much more challenging for us to control our impulses. And so we'll jump back into social media and we'll start scrolling or we'll start mindlessly checking emails when we should be engaging in high-performing tasks. We know that technology also causes a dysregulated sensory and nervous system. Technology offers a smorgasbord of sensory stimulations. There's things to look at, tap at, swipe, listen to, there's music. And as a result, our systems can get hyper-aroused and we find it really difficult to self-regulate. So we can often become agitated and frustrated when we switch off, meaning we want to stay connected more and more. So we also know that multitasking is a myth. Despite what we have thought, perhaps, ladies, I am here to tell you, both women and men, multitasking is not possible. When we think we are multitasking, what we're actually doing is something called continuous partial attention or task switching. But our devices fracture our attention all of the time. The problem with today's world is that the information is always coming to us. We get alerts, we get notifications, we get pings, we get messages. And it's not the other way around where we would forage and hunt for information. So again, it's back to that analogy that we have ancient brains in a high-tech world. In a study called The Cost of Interrupted Work, More Speed and Stress, researchers found that while people tend to work faster in conditions where they were constantly interrupted, which is often what happens when you are trying to multitask, the study found that the employees actually produced a lot less. We also know that they had experienced significantly higher rates of frustration and stress. And that really matters. We know that when you feel stressed, what's happening in your brain is your amygdala, the emotional center of your brain, is sending a stress signal to your hypothalamus, which reacts by letting your adrenal glands know that you're under some serious pressure. And your adrenal glands will respond by releasing, you guessed it, adrenaline into your bloodstream. And so we know that too much adrenaline causes this too strong a sense of arousal or a hyper-aroused state, and it makes it much more challenging for us to focus and perform. And I want to debunk this myth of multitasking here. We know that multitasking has significant cognitive mental costs. Despite what we think, we've got numerous studies that all conclusively find the same thing. When we multitask, we see increased error rates. Basically, as I've mentioned before, we have a mental load, a cognitive load or a threshold. When our cognitive load is exhausted, we tend to make more mistakes. We also know that when we multitask, we have much poorer retention rates in terms of information. We've actually done brain scans and we know that when we multitask, instead of information going to the hippocampus or the memory center of the brain, information goes to a different part called the striatum. Now, the striatum helps us with short-term retrieval. It helps us with procedural learning, but it is not the long-term memory center of the brain. So if we are multitasking, we are much less likely to recall the information at a later point in time. We also know, as I mentioned before, that tasks tend to take us much longer when we multitask. A study was done from the University of California, and they examined something called the resumption lag. After you have been interrupted, whether it's by a digital distraction, a meeting, a chatty coworker, How long does it take the average employee to reorient and focus their attention on the task that they were performing before the distraction? And the study told us that the average amount of time was 23 minutes for employees. This is a staggering amount when we stop to think of the number of distractions that we are encountering each day. We also know that when we multitask, our brains reach something called mental fatigue. When we multitask, our brain finds it stressful, so it dumps a whole lot of cortisol in our brain, and cortisol is the stress hormone. Cortisol physically inhibits neural pathways from forming. So again, in this stress state, we cannot form memories. We also know that multitasking often results in depleted glucose levels. That's our energy supply. So it's little wonder that many of us report feeling tired and foggy after a day of multitasking. So what are some practical, realistic solutions? How do we build a fortress around our focus? How do we avoid succumbing to screen distractions? What can we do to optimize our productivity? And we're not going to cover all of this in this module. It will be explored in subsequent modules. But a couple of strategies I want to talk about here. And the first and most obvious one is what we call proximity. Having your smartphone when you are working out of eyesight so that you will not reach for it to check social media or to respond quickly to an email. It's that old out of sight, out of mind strategy. We're unlikely to yearn for a device if we can't see it. And we'll go into this in more detail in module 5. But seeing our devices is literally often a mental trigger to grab it. And it's been reported that when Steve Jobs was designing the iPhone with his team, he claimed that he wanted the icons on the smartphone to be so appealing that you wanted to lick the screen when you saw it. So you can see how just having the technology within our eyesight, our vision, a line of sight, can be captivating and appealing for us. A second strategy here is in proximity is to remove from your home screen, or if you're talking about a desktop or a laptop computer, from the desktop, any of your weaknesses. So on your smartphone, removing the apps that are your digital distractions, social media, perhaps it's an online multiplayer game, but removing those from the home screen. We really want our home screen just to have functional tools on it. So dragging off the home screen any of your weaknesses and popping them into a folder. We can use physical boxes like this. This is by the stationery company Kikike. They have literally brought out a range of boxes where we can put our digital appendages in them so that we're not distracted. Again, works effectively as a productivity tool at work, but also can work well at home when we're wanting to be more present and connected. The second strategy I strongly encourage you to implement, and this works just with social media and with email, in fact, with any device that you use that sends you what we call push notifications. We need to turn off alerts and notifications. We know, studies have shown, that the average smartphone user who has enabled notifications will receive 45.9 notifications each day. And the problem is, every time you see a red bubble or an icon, it conditions your brain to be in a heightened state of alertness. It triggers a stress and a fear response. And again, this activates that sympathetic nervous system. We are diverted, our attention is diverted by these alerts and notifications. So choose the devices where you perhaps will receive notifications. And you also now, thanks to advances in the ways, the frequency, and even the batching of notifications, you can even elect to personalize the frequency of the durations that you receive. So control your notifications. I know that complete abstinence isn't an option. So to reduce your interruptions, for example, Apple devices in iOS 12 now enable customers to control how notifications are delivered. You can instantly manage your notifications so they can be turned off completely, or perhaps you might want a more staggered approach so they can be delivered to a notifications center. Siri can also intelligently make suggestions for notification settings, such as to quietly deliver or to turn alerts off, based on which alerts are acted upon. iOS 12 also offers the option of what we call grouped notifications, making it easier for you to view and manage multiple notifications at once. And this is a technique that we'll address later on, called batching, doing like tasks simultaneously. You can do similar things in Android devices. So for example, with Gmail, you can turn on high priority notifications. So this really limits the number of email alerts that you'll receive, and you'll only get notified when somebody is on your important or your priority list. So perhaps you do want to receive emails from your assistant, but emails from your sister-in-law don't necessarily make the cutoff list. We can also use tools to, again, this is all about controlling the digital distractions that are pushed towards us. And we know that one of the biggest forms of distraction in the workplace is our inbox. The average worker receives 100 emails a day, and we now know that it is a huge source of distraction. It's also a great tool. It's a brilliant communication tool, particularly if you are working in a multinational or an interstate team. But there are also some extreme circumstances when email can really be distracting. So there are now functions, depending on your email provider, but most options now give you the capability of pausing your inbox. If you don't have the capability of pausing your inbox, literally physically closing the button, pressing the button or the icon to turn your email off. We do not have to have email running in the background constantly. It is a huge source, particularly when we consider that resumption lag of 23 minutes on average. Every time we jump from one task back into another task to check, for example, email, and then back into the original task, our focus is really quite fractured. So a tool that I recommend is a tool if you use or you run your email through Gmail. And again, I'm very aware there are all sorts of different providers, but a great tool is called Boomerang. And Boomerang works on Gmail, it works on Outlook, and it works on iPhone. Another alternative, particularly if you're an Android user, is a tool called Inbox When Ready. Basically, these give us the capabilities of controlling when emails come to us, and also the added capability of when we choose to respond. See, part of the problem with email is often what we call the email tag game. We create this perpetual cycle of to and fro interactions, particularly if we instantaneously respond to an email. So in a moment, I'm going to talk about controlling your response rate and the time at which you respond. But one of the great strategies and one of the great benefits of technology is that we can automate when responses go. So using Boomerang, you get to explicitly state at what time you want an email response sent, even if you are not there live actively typing it.
The average worker gets over 100 emails a day. That's a lot of pop-up notifications, vibrations, distractions, and lost focus. These interruptions are more than just annoying. Research shows they can cause so much stress that they're actually bad for your health. But there's a better way. Introducing Inbox Pause by Boomerang. Inbox Pause stops incoming emails from coming into your inbox, so you can focus on what matters, whether it's an upcoming presentation, messages already in your inbox, or enjoying some R&R. When you're ready, just unpause, and all your email will be delivered to your inbox. And Inbox Pause does more. Studies show that checking your email just 3 or 4 times a day lowers stress and increases productivity. But in our always-on world, it can be hard to disconnect. Until now, Inbox Pause can automatically pause and unpause your inbox, delivering your email in batches. Get your emails in the morning, after lunch, and in the evening, and spend the time in between working productively without interruption. Inbox Pause features powerful delivery exceptions that allow important messages to arrive even when your inbox is paused. That way, you can filter out the noise while still getting the emails that matter. You've tried meditation, juice cleanses, and even yoga. Now it's time to try something proven to reduce stress. Get Inbox Pause today, available in both Boomerang for Gmail and Boomerang for Outlook.
And I want to remind you, as something that was mentioned in that particular video, two crucial things. Number one is that you can even if you don't have access to Boomerang or other digital capabilities of pausing your inbox, literally shutting email off and choosing what times of the day you want to access it and when you want to access it. Really, really critical that you are in control of the technology and not the other way around, where the technology is controlling you. The second feature with a tool like Boomerang or Inbox When Ready is that you can set up powerful provisions, powerful exceptions to the rules, so that if something is absolutely critical, you will get it. I know many of us are anxious, reluctant to use tools like this because we suffer from what I described earlier, that loss aversion, that fear of missing out. We don't want to miss out on a critical email. And so this is where we can create rules and we can create exceptions so that if something was critical, we could still have access to the information. Another tool, and again, this is all about taming our inboxes, is we can use an autoresponder or a signature that indicates to the sender or the person we are replying to when they can expect an email response. One of the problems with email is that it often creates that chain of response, and it often creates that habitual backwards and fro ping pong interaction, particularly if we respond instantaneously to an email, either a colleague's or a client's email. So you can set up, if you set up, and all email providers will have this option of setting up an autoresponder. So what you can do is create a basic text script. There's an example here and there'll be one in the handouts as well. But an automatic reply that states that the email has been received, and it can inform the person when to expect a reply, within what sort of time period would they expect. See, this stops us from constantly checking because it gives our client, our colleague who is emailing us, the peace of mind that the email has been received, and it also gives them a likely expectation as to when they'll receive a reply. This is really critical because one of the problems with email is that we think we need to, because again, we are tricked into thinking that everything that comes to us is urgent and important, that we need to respond in such a way. So this gives us more or less a little bit of breathing space. Perhaps you want a signature on your email just to indicate to the receiver of your emails when you do check your emails or when you are likely to reply. I know some people in the tagline of their email signature suggest that they only check emails on certain days or first thing in the morning, and that the sender or the receiver of the message could expect a reply within a certain period of time. Perhaps it's a 48-hour time period. Some people even pop details of their assistant or their EA or a person to contact if something is a more pressing or urgent issue. So again, signatures and autoresponders, and there's some more text and scripts in the handouts as well. But these can be a great way to actually utilize the benefits of technology, but using it in a way where we're in control and not the other way around. Some other tools that we can use, and we're moving away from email now, and we're talking more about general use of technology. Would we rather not be spending our time doing online shopping when we should be working on a report? Would we rather not spend time on our internal communication board and actually working on a proposal or a client document? Whatever the distracting parts of the technology or the internet are, you can actually control them. So if you're on your laptop or desktop computer, a great tool that you can consider is something called Rescue Time. And Rescue Time actually tracks exactly the activities, and it can be a little scary and confrontational in the first couple of instances, but it actually digitally documents and quantifies exactly how much time you are engaging on work and non-work related tasks. You can set it up. Obviously, you don't need to send this to your boss or your colleagues, but it can be a really great tool for us to actually see how much time we are spending on productive, effective tasks. When it comes to smartphones, there are some brilliant tools that we can use to tame how frequently notifications and alerts and calls can come to us. So with iOS devices, the Do Not Disturb function can actually silence phone calls. It can silence alerts and notifications that you might get while your phone is locked. You can also schedule Do Not Disturb and tailor it so that it can again override some of your rules if you're expecting an urgent call from certain people. So perhaps your children's childcare provider, the school, your mother, your partner can all have rules and exclusions so that even if Do Not Disturb is activated, their phone calls can still come through. So when this is activated, you'll see a crescent moon or an icon on your status bar. So you can actually set time specific time. So say you're working on an important proposal and you want to have 3 hours of focused time, you can set Do Not Disturb on your phone so that it automatically diverts to voicemail during that period. Of course, if you need exceptions to that rule, you can set that up as well. You can also do similar things with Android devices, and I'll show you in just a moment. So here you can tap your settings, you go into Do Not Disturb, and then you turn on Scheduled, and you can set a time. So perhaps every Monday you want 3 hours of uninterrupted client phone calls. Perhaps it is a time during the night, perhaps bedtime. When bedtime is enabled, the lock screen will dim, all your calls will be silenced, and notifications will appear under the during bedtime in the notification center until your scheduled Do Not Disturb period ends. You can also choose to silence everything, so all calls and notifications. So perhaps you're going into a really important meeting and you don't want to be disrupted. You can also enable repeated calls. So if, for example, your mother-in-law was repeatedly calling you, perhaps it's over twice within called you twice within 3 minutes, then the second call is perhaps not silenced. So the technology can really be personalized in such a way that you can be in control. With Android devices, there's also similar options. There's a Do Not Disturb mode, and you access this by swiping from the top of your screen to open the notification shade, and then obviously selecting the Do Not Disturb icon. All of these details are in the PDF handouts, and obviously they change from phone to phone. But I really strongly encourage you to figure out what the Do Not Disturb settings are, because we know our mobile phones, whether they're professional or personal calls, can be a huge source of distraction. Another strategy we can do to tame the digital distractions that are permeating our lives is to do a cull. Literally unfollowing, unsubscribing, and unfriending people to reduce what I call that mental threshold, that cognitive load. If we cull our friends and the number of emails, it obviously reduces the number of distractions and the amount of time that we need to spend plugged in. You see, our attention is compromised and we succumb to distractions because we're often mentally overloaded. So our purpose for culling is to literally lighten the load. So permission to go and unsubscribe. Another really practical strategy, and I will admit, I was a little dubious when I heard this one, going grayscale. Literally turning your phone, and it works particularly well for phones and small handheld devices like tablets. But technology, as I mentioned before, we know was designed in such a way to keep us hooked and not necessarily to help us. And one of the main ways that technology has been designed to keep us hooked is through the use of explicitly and specifically selected colors. We know colors like, for example, the little red bubble on your email icon to tell you that you've got 55 unread messages is red for an intentional reason. Red is triggers an emergency response. It's associated with danger. It would be a very different response if it was a yellow or a baby blue icon. So it's no accident that technology has been designed, as we said before. Steve Jobs admitted he wanted you to want to feel like you wanted to lick your screen when you unlocked your phone. So going grayscale is a really great strategy. And again, instructions on how to do this obviously vary greatly depending on your phone, but they are in the handouts.
Human eyes are sensitive to warm colors. In eye tracking tests like this one, they gravitate particularly to bright red. That's why so many apps have redesigned their icons to be brighter, bolder, and warmer over the years. It's also why notification bubbles are red. A little icon like this, or this, doesn't have the same impact on your attention as this. But you can neutralize that distracting effect by selecting a grayscale color filter in your phone's accessibility settings. When you make everything black and white, your brain isn't tricked into thinking this is any more important to you than this.
I mean, there's a reason why slot machines are, bright in color and have flashing lights and ding, 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 ding. And they have the sensory, like, input too, right? And so just noticing that if I take out the color, it changes the some of the addictiveness.
Finally,
And so that's really pertinent advice there. I will really encourage you to give it a go. It does make a really profound difference in your desire to use the device. And trust me, scrolling through Instagram is nowhere near as enjoyable when you're looking at it grayscale. Another strategy is to create folders. So your digital weaknesses, perhaps they're social media, perhaps they're online shopping sites, perhaps it's gaming, but create folders. And I heard from the Resilience Project, Hugh, talk about he creates folders and he calls folders, he drags these folders again off the home screen, so removing your weaknesses from that home screen, popping them on perhaps, you know, screen five of your phone, but congregating your digital weaknesses in a folder and perhaps calling it, as Hugh suggests, things I'll later regret, where you store the apps that are your weaknesses. You could also create folders for work. The idea again is that based on that proximity strategy is that all of the functional tools are on your homepage and any of your weaknesses are removed from that initial home screen. Again, able to do this on both Android and iOS devices. Another option is to only ever launch apps by typing them. And again, it sounds really simple, but typing the name of the app that you want to use or the website you want to go to requires more effort, and it actually makes you pause and consider, do I really want to do this? So using on Android devices, you can use the search box on your home screen, and iOS devices, the best results you get when you turn off Siri, and you then go in and start typing the actual commands that you would like. Again, it is just giving our brains that pause moment so that we're not tricked or deluded into thinking that everything is urgent and important. As I've mentioned a couple of times, keeping just the functional tools on your home screen so that it is literally just a tool that can make and receive phone calls in essence and perform functional tasks. And another really simple strategy is to create a powerful, perhaps a motivational screensaver. When you're initially trying to curb your habits, and we'll talk more about this in the following module, we need to create a screensaver that perhaps reminds us of why we're trying to make these changes. Something that will again be a trigger for us to pause, because many of these habits have been built up over time and have become so habitualized that we're not actually aware of how readily we have adopted these. So a little screensaver can be a reminder. So I want to wrap up this module by reminding us that we need to be in charge of prioritizing the potent. We have to set technology up in such a way so that it doesn't compromise our focus and our attention. We need to be in a position where we can use it by all means. Technology is a brilliant, effective, functional tool, but we need to use it in such a way that it doesn't mitigate our productivity and our performance. So we need to control when it distracts us, because as I've mentioned in this module, multitasking is a myth. Our brain cannot do it, despite what we have perhaps deluded ourselves into thinking. So that's it for module four. There's a couple of things for you to follow up, and you'll see in the checklist there's a few items in this particular module. So make sure, if you haven't, please go and complete the productivity and performance self-assessment, the online tool. There'll be a link below this video where you can click on that. Remember to note your score, because we will revisit this assessment at the end of module six. Some other pragmatic strategies I'd love for you to implement: turn off alerts and notifications, not necessarily on every device that you own. Perhaps you just want to disable alerts and notifications for email, or perhaps you're going to disable it on your work phone. Try it, see if it makes a difference. If that doesn't sit well with you, perhaps just start with reducing the frequency of notifications and alerts. So instead of receiving them instantaneously, perhaps you ask, for example, now with social media, you can choose what times you get your, so you can batch your notifications. Learn how to pause your inbox, and even if it's as simple as closing your inbox down rather than having it open in the background, if you don't have access to tools like Boomerang. Set up, have a go setting up an autoresponder or a signature that will inform people of your rules and your boundaries around email use. And we'll talk about this more in module 5. Cull your email and your social media. Remember, huge permission to go and unsubscribe and unfollow. Learn how to set up Do Not Disturb on your phone so that when you do need to prioritize those potent, critical tasks, that you can do it in a way that your phone will not be disturbing you. Have a go setting up and trial Grayscale. I strongly encourage you to do it even for just a couple of days. It really will make a big difference. Or perhaps just turning on Grayscale at your moments of weakness. I know I found it particularly effective to use Grayscale at night because I would often find myself scrolling mindlessly through social media at the end of the night. Again, tired, my prefrontal cortex, logical brain is off, and so not making the most logical wise decisions at that particular time. And the other tool, a step, is to create folders and remove your temptations off your home screen. So that's it for module 4. In module 5, we're going to dive into some more strategies about how to tweak some of your tech habits so that you can adopt more healthy, more productive ways to use technology. I look forward to seeing you in that module.